Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
All right, welcome back. It's another Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are doing well. As always, if you would like to get early access to the episodes, as well as other things such as merchandise, match reactions immediately after each league fixture, patreon.com/RomaPress and @RomaPress for social media, video version on YouTube and Twitter, X, Facebook, you know the drill by now, everyone. Thank you for your support, especially during this very, very chaotic season. However, tonight, Andy, Roma, they went 3-0 over Braga in a match that I did get frustrated only from the standpoint of we have been hammered by 7 goals on so many occasions. Anytime there's an opportunity for Roma to give it to another for 7 goals, they never do it. Do you remember the last time they had like a absurdly high scoring output?
Well, Empoli, yes. with Mourinho. But on the other hand, John, I also remember what took place after that game, you know, when we thought that the team was on the up and up, and then everything sort of started to fall apart already then and there. So perhaps it's for the best that we don't get crazy, and perhaps it's for the best that we get a sort of a reasonable scoreline that shows that there is still a lot of work to do, that there is still a lot of work to do specifically in serving Artem Dovbyk, who, poor guy, today, I thought he was lonelier than I am on a Friday night, you know? So that's saying a lot. I'm just saying. Whoa. So, yeah, no, we're not going to go into that territory, but I'm just saying that this scoreline, you know, 3-0, Braga down to 10 men. It's not like Fiorentina tonight who wins 7-0. You don't get the impression, oh, that, my God, this team is unstoppable. No, this team, once again, did under Ranieri what they were always supposed to do. Their job. This is tonight at the Olympico against the Portuguese side that comes in on the Europa League on Thursday night. You know, I think this is the second time that they've been to the Olympico, because we faced them when Fonseca was was on the bench. So clearly we were once again called upon to deliver, and tonight we delivered, mind you, again, under the circumstances that Roma have been functioning in. So with all their limitations, tonight's scoreline reflects that, I think, in a realistic manner. We're not getting out of hand. We're not thinking, oh my God, these guys, they're the Avengers, you know, they're these guys are unstoppable. Who's gonna stop them? Which seems to be said by the Italian media about every single Italian team that does well on the weekend or in the midweek. Like yesterday, you have Juventus who beat Manchester City, and all of a sudden the narrative from Juve that were underachieving under Thiago Motta by drawing basically every single match, now they are the team to beat. So thankfully, Roma do not put themselves in that discussion, because there's nothing to cheer about. There's something to be happy about. But tonight is reasonable. Tonight, Roma do a job well done.
It is a job well done. On the other hand, even though it's not a incredibly decisive score, well, 3-0, very little in doubt there, but it's not a well-punctuated 7-0, as you mentioned, that Fiorentina had. However, this was still a fairly dominant performance. I believe they ended the first half with nearly 20 shots, and they ended with nearly 40. I mean, this was an attacking output that, if you just consider what we saw at any point under Ivan Juric, and then compare it to what we saw tonight, it is, again, so baffling to believe that this is still the same set of players, the same group that worked with the guy that he could have come with stacks of cash and said, listen, give me 2 goals tonight and all of you can share in this. I don't know if there was any bribe in the world that would have gotten those guys to be able to score 2 goals under Ivan Juric. And yet tonight, they easily could have had double what they had. I think they ended with nearly 20 shots on goal. Their XG over 3. This is something that just within the span of a few weeks, Claudio Ranieri has been able to get this team to not being able to buy a goal or bribe their way to a goal, to doing it with these. Now, the competition, I don't want to downplay it either, because some people said that in my post-match reaction after Lecce, where a few of our patrons said I was making too big of a deal about it. But am I, though? Because this was also the same team that needed a penalty to beat a Torino side. This is still the team that struggled to score at home to Empoli, Andy. So if we're going to complain in moments where it is deserved, where Roma...
Yeah, but again, also nothing comes easy to this team this year.
No, like,
I don't.
Never,
that's what I never, what I say never, is with never. The. I don't understand why, on one hand, fans keep criticizing the team. On the other hand, they can't even recognize those, you know, those glimmers of positive that they're showing. And right now, they're showing that. As in, right now, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. So why not recognize that, knowing how hard it's been for them? You know, these guys haven't been losing on purpose. These guys were losing because they were not a team. So everything that we've seen so far, all those performances against Napoli, Spurs, Atalanta, Lecce, nothing came easy to this team. Nothing is coming easy to this team. They have to basically build up from scratch. Following the sacking of De Rossi and Juric, what were we left with after Fiorentina beat us 5-1? What were we left with after the draw against Saint-Gilloise in Brussels? You know, like, what are we talking about? You know, this team hadn't given us anything to think that they could do something. And right now, they're actually doing something. It may not be a great feat to expect them to perform against Lecce and Braga at home, but far from granted, given where we were just a few weeks ago.
When you look at just the difference in attacking movement, in action, this is where I think Ranieri has made the biggest strides with this team in a very short time. That's the other portion of this too. You're working with a team under a manager, their third manager of the season, who came in during an international break, didn't have time to implement much yet. When you look just statistically over the last week, their attacking output. Now, again, I'm not going to pretend that they did this against Juve, but still, when you're struggling against the likes of Empoli, Genoa, you drew against. Why are we not to make a big deal, or at least give praise to them when they are able to do this against Lecce, Braga? It doesn't matter. If you were struggling against everybody, if you were able to overturn things, that's all I care about. I couldn't care less who it is against. The thing that also impressed me too is you mentioned our boy Dovbyk, who, yes, all season he has gone starving. This poor guy is just dying. Tom Hanks envies this guy, okay? And at least Tom Hanks had
Tom Hanks had he had Wilson, he had crabs, you know, he had sunshine, you know, he had warm weather, you know, he could sleep under the open sky. What does Dovbyk have? He's got nothing. He's isolated. No. He makes those runs plenty of times. You're watching your television, you're like, pass it to him. And every time they look the other way. And it's been over a month since the last time this guy scored. And tell right now that it's frustrating him beyond belief.
That is fair. Now, the one thing in fairness, though, that we did complain about is he was the only one who could find the back of the net for the first 3 months of the season. The only one. You were getting nothing from anybody else. And I would say, without doubt, the biggest and most eye-opening portion of what we've seen in this brief time under Ranieri is who is scoring the goals. Pellegrini, the guy who Ranieri said, he can't play right now because he is playing as if he has the weight of the world on his shoulders. He needs to be able to find that joy again, to relax a little bit. And once he does that, then he will be able to reclaim a place within the team. He scores within the first 10 minutes. Who else do we have after that? Saúd. Huh? And then the third goal, Hermoso. So
it's like one big storyline tonight, you know? Yes. Like it's sort of like a redemption night for so many guys. Pellegrini, because even today he was being linked with Galatasaray. Even a January move, you know, because of who his agent is and the tension.
Zoolander, he's putting in the work early this winter.
The agent, the tension between the agent and Roma, following the saga with Zaleski and everything. Then you have Saúd, who until just a few weeks ago was just like this alien being that we have had no idea what he could do. I think we had seen like maybe 20 minutes of him, something like that. I don't even remember when it was. Was it against Athletic Bilbao? I don't remember. But
I don't remember either.
It was quite unremarkable. And then Mario Hermoso, who also was linked with a January exit because he is not getting any playing time, and he was injured for over a month. So in one game, we had three storylines. Add to that the fact that Mats Hummels was supposed to rest tonight. He was starting, you know, all these things that were sort of boiling and stewing in these opening weeks and months of the season. Today, all of a sudden, we were treated to a night where all these guys that were being put on blast up until a few hours ago by the media, tonight they perform, and they perform wonderfully, and they're the reason that Roma win. So, again, sort of the same way it happens when Roma lose and you get all kinds of drama, tonight Roma win, and they do it in the most sort of cinematic, dramatic fashion by pulling you in. You're like, what? Pellegrini scored? He's playing? Saúd? Becoming the first Saudi player to score in a European competition? Are you kidding me? Mario Hermoso, who was being linked with Real Madrid just a few days ago? What?
It's interesting. It just goes to show it is only December, and the amount of twists and turns we've been subjected to this season, it's, again, astonishing to me that this is still the same group of guys that we see struggling against the likes of Genoa. I know I say it every year about regretting the points you drop earlier in the season. But if you just look back, Andy, at some of those early losses that Roma have had, those look so bad in hindsight. I mean, we knew they were bad at the time, and it just felt wrong in the moment. But my goodness, looking back at some of those defeats, I mean, Genoa, nothing this season. Empoli, give me a break. Maybe the only one that Roma can exit with some dignity from still is what? Inter? Is that it? Atalanta, maybe? I don't know. But you just look at what we've seen in recent weeks and compare it to tonight. And it's, again, just so confusing that you can get this sort of performance of result from this group, which is also the same one that in your home opening match at home to Empoli of the new season, you look flat, dejected.
On the night that Paulo Dybala announced that he was staying.
Yes. How do you not get up for that? You look uninspired. You look tired. I cannot. Yeah. And it just goes to show, again, at Roma, I think you published a story some weeks ago about how Roma got the new team psychologist or mental coach. Can you think of, do you think the Premier League, I was on an Everton podcast earlier today. Do you think the Everton supporters know who their team's mental coach or psychologist is?
And the guy the guy left. The guy's contract wasn't renewed. So that made it even more comical is that they hired him. Gave him a temporary trial run of 20 days. And then after 20 days, the Friedkins were like, yeah, it's clearly not working.
What did that guy see?
England.
Well, what did he see that clearly it that led Roma to say, no, this is not going to work
out? I don't know, but he managed to get one photo taken of him during the match against Bologna. So there's one piece of evidence that this guy was actually hired by Roma on a temporary basis, and the look of pure dread, pure shock. You know, almost as if he had been pulled out of a battle in Da Nang in Vietnam in 1967. That was his look.
It's just incredible. But again, they at least show they're able to do something from this, which is why when they have those performances as they did earlier in the season, it just frustrates you to no end. As far as the attack goes, because there is one or two more names I want to touch on. Sule, who is not getting credit on the goal of Saud, that little touch he had. I want to give him his due. I don't know what to make of him. You want to speak of Vietnam? That poor guy. Imagine just you have a good season at Frosinone. Yeah, you have to play under Eusebio Di Francesco, but you end up being their leading scorer, and you are the only reason, essentially. Because there was no attacking help outside of him. You are the reason why on the final day they were not relegated.
11 goals and 3 assists. Yeah.
Yes.
11 goals.
You were the sole player who kept them in Serie A above safety until the final moments. The only one. And again, you had the play under Eusebio Di Francesco, which in and of itself is punishment enough. You know you're going to leave Juventus. In fact, they tell you before the season even ends, listen, don't get comfortable. Just pack lightly. Don't bring your entire luggage back to Torino. Just bring some things to get through a few weeks because they're going to monetize him. And you go the entire summer being pursued, several clubs, both in Serie A and abroad. And you have Daniele De Rossi, who, by the way, not only speaks Spanish, Any Spanish speakers know different dialects, forms of Spanish spoken in different countries. De Rossi speaks because we know he was at Boca Juniors for what, 12 seasons? Oh, no, 12 months? No, 5 months. Okay, yeah, five months. He's able to speak in this perfect, perfect dialect, Spanish, all summer to Sule. And within 2 weeks, you get the deal done with Roma, you come to a huge affair. Remember what he was greeted with at the airport? That was madness. And within about 2.5 weeks, all of that goes down the toilet, into the bin. And that poor guy under Juric was never going to be a good fit. And now under Ranieri, it seems that Ranieri has gone out of his way to say, hey, this is somebody we're going to rely on now and into the future. He is very important for us, almost as a way to reassure him, but also to make it clear that you can't expect too much. We can't put the weight of the world on him. Let's give him some time. He is a tough one to crack or to get a grasp on because part of me wants to say he has to be pressing. The other part of me says, wow, you want to speak of for a young player, a tumultuous way to begin life at a new big club where you're not just a name, you're going to be one of the faces that you are among the most spoken of. You're now one of the biggest transfers of the summer, and you are going to be relied upon heavily. I just look at this confluence of circumstances in which he's arrived at Roma, and I don't think many take that into account when they're discussing him because he is taking I looked at our group chat of the patrons and some of the guy is catching a few strays, but I don't know realistically when we see everything that has happened, how we can at least understand why he hasn't gotten off to a thriving start. That's not even mentioning what he goes from starting to benched under De Rossi in those four matches. Do you remember that? He starts against Cagliari, yeah? And then I believe he started against Genoa.
He started on a number of occasions. Yeah. And but then every time he would lose continuity he would remember when he scores against Hellas Verona, he gets benched. The game right after that, he gets his first Roma goal. He gets benched by Juric, which is inexplicable. I think Sule is completely has been completely mishandled. Also, it is a lot of it is up to him. Thankfully, he's sort of in a weird position because he's sort of in a weird position where he got lumped in with the likes of Dybala, Pizzilli, and Baldanzi. You know, all players more or less roaming around the same area. And so thankfully there hasn't been that much pressure on him from the fans, you know, like most fans don't walk around Rome being like, you know, he's not the kind of problem that Iturbe was. Iturbe was a problem because Iturbe was made out into this deity when he was signed and then it didn't happen. And then it was a problem because you were like, why is this guy starting 35 games and not scoring once? You know, like, why is this guy playing such a prominent part in our plans? And why is he underperforming to such an extent? And Sule, on the other hand, is not doing that. Sule is struggling on all fronts. Thankfully, in that position, we have other players that are coming through. One thing that doesn't change, obviously, is Zaleski, who absolutely sucks every time.
I was waiting to save that one to the end. He got an assist tonight.
He got an assist, but I'll be damned if he ever makes the right decision in the opponent's half of. I, you know, even when he gets an assist, you can argue that he just went tonight all game long without a single decision being the correct one. It's like it's like watching a child try to stick a circle into a square. You know, boom, 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 boom. It's not working. It's not working. And yet he continues to do it, you know. But unlike a child that stops, Zaleski perseveres. And I don't know what to say to him anymore. On the other hand, let me focus on the positive, because I really do think that this thing with Saud playing such an important role tonight is big in the sense that it shows to the other players who came in amidst this wave of skepticism, these new signings. Saud shows that you don't need to tick all the boxes. Mm. You don't need to do everything correctly, because Saud doesn't. Saud doesn't make the right decisions at all times. He is not very useful defensively. He will never be the sort of the player who answers all your questions. There is plenty of things that he struggles with, but he shows the one thing that we all learned when Gervinho is playing for us. If you're playing on the wing and you're fast, play simple, and you'll assist and you'll score goals. That's what Saud has been doing. He got an assist against Lecce. He scores tonight. Why? Because he runs. It's as simple as that. Why? Because he understands now that if he doesn't overcomplicate things, if he can play 1-2 football, one-touch football, quick pass to the teammate drops the ball off to him once again, into the depth, into the open space, and it's just him one-on-one with the defender, he's going to win every single time if it comes down to speed. So you have to make use of that. And that is a privilege that Roma haven't had since, I would say, Mohamed Salah, okay?
Yes.
I'm not putting Saud in that conversation. I'm just saying this is a player who, if you are able to convince him to completely strip down his game and understand that he needs to do just a handful of things right, he can be a deal breaker in how he breaks down the opponent's defense by using this natural talent that he's got, which is speed, which is remarkable. And both in Europa League and in Serie A, it can be devastating. And we saw that against Lecce, and we see that tonight.
What a great comparison, because Gervinho is the prime example, because I always bring him up, and I do so usually in comparison to somebody like Juan Iturbe, who you also mentioned earlier. Football is a very simple game, to me, in my opinion. in order to be an effective player, there at least needs to be one to two things that I can point out when watching you. Like, I am 5 years old. I know nothing about the match. If I watch you for 10 minutes, I should be able to point out almost immediately one thing you are good at, one part of your game that you thrive in. Zaleski, nothing. There is nothing. There is nothing. That is the exact same line of argument I used with Florenzi, who, as a fullback, could neither defend, attack, pass, have any positional awareness about him. And Zaleski is exactly the same. Now, when it comes to Gervinho, there's that saying, keep it simple, stupid. Do you remember how fun it was when Roma would just thump the ball forward to that guy? They wouldn't ask him to come back. They wouldn't ask him to be, you need to come back in defense. You need to be here.
You just watch that beautiful hairline recede time and time again as he galloped down that flank. When you saw that hairline just pull from his skull, you knew that he was onto something.
It was so elementary, the level in which they handled him. And it was so easy to see how he thrived. It was so, hey, Totti, Pjanic, just thump the ball forward to that guy. He's very fast. Just thump it forward. He'll probably beat out all the defenders. You are spot on. That is how Saul should be playing. Now, thankfully, when you play three at the back, there is obviously going to be less of a defensive burden on him to do so. And this is a perfect position for him to thrive, particularly when you have Zeki Salik as the primary competition, a guy who is getting to the point where I do not know what he thrives at anymore. Juani Torbe, at one point...
I think Zeki Salik is one of the unluckiest players that I've seen in recent years at Roma. Anytime he's got a good spell, it never comes when Roma are having a good spell. Whenever he has a good performance, it's very momentary. And it gets shut down either by an injury or an unfortunate episode where he concedes or leads to a goal. That's what happens.
Yes. That is why that performance in Milan, he might as well put that right next to the league trophy that he won with Lille. I mean, that is something that I will not let anybody forget, because when you see him making mistake after mistake, which the problem with him are his mistakes are so subtle at times. They look subtle, but in the end, Roma ultimately pay in the form of whether it's an own goal or somebody just makes a move past him and he looks the fool. I feel bad for him in that regard. But when it comes to like Zaleski versus Saúl, Zaleski has that Juani Torbe sort of air about him, also in the sense of remembering Torbe, the level of promise that was around the guy, because you got hoodwinked very early on. Do we remember, again, I will never forget the match, CSKA Moscow in the Champions League, where he scores that, I believe he scored the first or the second goal in the match, and he does that great celebration. And it's like, oh my gosh, we have something here. It wasn't all of the previous season. It wasn't all about that 49-year-old Luca Toni still having a bit of magic in his boots that allowed him to score those goals. It was this kid too. He had something to do with it. And then within about 3 months, we saw, oh gosh, he has nothing. He stinks. And with Zaleski, we did get hoodwinked very early on. I know we like to make fun of him. Do you remember how early on, how relatively promising he was? Very early in that, I will never forget. Do you remember that early part under Jose Mourinho when he started to utilize him? And it just seemed like out of nowhere, he popped on, popped onto the scene and made his way into the team. And he went from somebody hardly ever discussed to somebody, oh, wow, no Spinazzola. Thank goodness we have Zaleski. And he had a very brief yet bright period. And then after that,
here was this Primavera kid out of nowhere who was coming through for this team on the biggest stage, at a moment where Roma were really in the Conference League fight.
Yes, and he was filling a role that Roma never had continuity in. You had, again, bright periods with Spinazzola when he was available, but he was never consistently at your disposal. So to have somebody who was able to fill that role...
And let's forget about Matias Vigna. I see that we've all completely... Okay.
That actually happened too. You remember that World Cup? I think he had two good matches and then he just.
Yeah, yeah. He's in Brazil. He's in Brazil. Yes, he's having a good time.
With Gerson, no? Aren't they on the same, or are they not on the same team?
But didn't Gerson have like some medical health scare or something? Didn't he have
I don't know.
Stroke
Yeah.
Wow, this went really dark really quickly. Hold on.
This
okay,
went really
folks.
Dark because you're getting me into the thing of him taking the photo of the shirt with Totti on it, and then it gets
no.
About 25
okay.
different things.
Okay.
But with Saúdo, this is how you when you have guys like him, an unknown quantity who comes into your team, he's young. Okay. You do not give him an expansive role or expansive
And also he's coming from
team.
A completely different reality. You know, like there's the kind of pressure this guy's got. I mean, we don't know, but this guy's got an entire nation sitting on his back because he's the first Saudi player in Serie A. He's the first, as we see today, he's the first Saudi player to score in a European competition. I mean, huge. And yet he's a key player for the national team. And yet so far, what had he done for Roma? 20 odd minutes against Athletic Bilbao and then being ridiculed right after the match because of that?
Yes. It's very simple, this game sometimes, where, you know, you just put your guys in positions to thrive and allow them to do the things they're good at.
And going back to Sule, that's the issue of Sule, John. Sule was with Juric. The matter was what does Juric want him to do? Kind of like with Dybala. And if Dybala, a veteran, struggled with Juric's demands, it was bound to happen to Matias Sule as well. You know, here you have a young kid who came through for Frosinone. What the hell are you asking of him? And how can he fulfill that at this time that is difficult for the entire team? Saúd proves that you just have to do 2+2. That's all you need to do sometimes. And that sometimes makes a world of difference. Tonight, you have the edge because Saúd is there. As funny as it sounds, that's where the edge is, you know? And for so long, Roma have sort of omitted these positions. Roma so many times seem to have forgotten what it was all about. That football sometimes really is about getting the simple stuff out of the way. So many times they had players at their disposal and they wouldn't make use of them. And you'd be like, God damn it, why aren't we making use of this? Why aren't we relying on set pieces more? Why aren't we relying on headers? Why, if we have this guy here, if we'd have that guy there? Saúd reminds you that, hey, you know, wingers have a very simple task. If you make it simple enough for them, they have more freedom in going forward. You know, look at Zaleski. He's emblematic of what happens when someone overcomplicates things, overthinks things, and gets it all wrong, and then gets lost along the way.
Oh, Saúd is. That's what happens when somebody sucks as a footballer.
Well, no, sure. But exactly. Well, I said it before. It sucks. But Saúd is. It just reminds me of that video that Luciano Spalletti. Remember when he sort of showed up at a press conference and he pulled the video of Mohamed Salah, you know, against the Chievo Verona, I think it was. And he shows, he said, the movimenti corretti.
Yeah.
The correct movements. His whole present, like he made a specific, he brought a laser, brought a screen, and he showed the journalists what Salah impressed him with. And he just underlined what he impressed him with was not goal scoring ability, it was not intelligence, but it was the simple movements, the pace that allows those movements to happen on the pitch, how he reads the action correctly, thanks to his speed. And that's, we know the Salah that we knew at Roma was in good part. He was still not the Salah that we saw at Liverpool, that who was a fully realized player. He was still, you know, just getting started, given that he went on to become a Ballon d'Or nominee. With Roma, it was all about speed. Sometimes it's crucial not to overcomplicate things.
Speaking of not overcomplicating things, to end this, Belotti, is he going to give it? Is he going to cook up Porgino for all of us at the weekend?
Because haven't we seen enough? I mean, Zaniolo was the recent one. So if Belotti were to score, I think it would set off some climate change destruction on the weekend. I really do think that there would be something akin to the apocalypse, because Belotti is a player that even after this move to Como has struggled immensely. So thank God it doesn't mean that, you know, he was... You know, we don't have to get that whole narrative of Roma didn't know what to do with Belotti. No, just Belotti stopped being a good footballer. He got lost. His whole sense of being a footballer lied in the fact that he was a leader for Torino. As soon as you took him out of that context, he was useless. He's still useless under Cesc Fabregas. But what do I know? I blasted Zaniolo a number of times and he went on to score against us.
You know, there were at least half a dozen of those articles pre-written after his move was announced. You knew. I could even probably tell you the names of the guys who had those articles already written. It does make me feel better, though, to see him be a non-entity with Como, a team who, if you want to speak of, just should revolve around a guy like him. And you know, the fact that he is not an out and out first choice, while there's Cutrone, who prior to the season,
but Como in general have been quite comical as a team. You know, it was even over the summer, it was such a comical collection of players, you know. And most of them Spanish, you know, and you go, oh yeah, okay, sure, Cesc Fabregas picking his friends. And then you had the whole thing with Varane, the injury and him becoming a club executive, and Belotti, and again, Cutrone, a guy who hasn't done anything worthwhile since, 2017? I mean, Jesus Christ, you know, we're really digging into the dirt of Serie A here, almost as if we were bringing up La Padula or Saponara. That's the kind of level of Walter Birsa, you know? Cutrone is that kind of player of those, that milieu of Serie A, that milieu of players that are sort of there, but you wish they weren't.
that is the perfect synopsis of them. They are the quintessential Serie A side, just a collection of misfit and thrown out toys that have somehow washed ashore onto Le Como, and this is what they are left with, a Belotti with the Cesc Fabregas as the manager. I mean, it's fantastic stuff.
And I can't believe that, like, the Como, I have done one thing, which is marketing. They marketed the hell out of that team, because nobody's going to tell me that is a pretty place. Nobody's going to convince me that border town, that border hole.
Now you're doing it. Man, I didn't say a single word today, and now you've taken it over. Go.
I know. That border hole, that practically Swiss town, more Swiss than Italian. that hole of mostly Swiss Italians and George Clooney wannabes is not going to convince me that they can have a successful football team. I don't care how much clout, how much money you got behind it. It's ridiculous, okay? They have a wonderful marketing team that has tried to fool the world into believing that by bringing Cesc Fabregas into this dump, because it really is a dump over a beautiful lake, but it's still a dump, and give them a few fancy jerseys, you're gonna make a football team out of it. No way, sir. I'm unfortunately I'm going to be stopping there on the 26th. I'm driving through Como, and I think I'm stopping for the night.
That's fantastic. So I say this as a half Slovenian from where I'm from. You are speaking exactly things that just in my, I keep them inside. But you
if we have any Como listeners, please forget about it. I'll be happy to grab a coffee on the 26th.
Well, until the match against Como, we will talk to you then. Until next time, everyone. Ciao.
Ciao.